Hey, welcome back into a little of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Breton. Go by SEC Mike, and there's one of our favorites, Chris Marler. You still work for Saturday Night South? What is your resume? I can't remember.
God's not real. Nothing's real.
How are you hanging in there, buddy? Alabama fan? I can't believe you showed up here.
Dude, so here's the thing. FSU fans have to be so happy right now. I grew up in a household that was all Bama fans, and there's always a silver lining. Everyone here knows how much I hate my dad. He's unhappy today, so it's a win-win now. DeBoer is... God is really just hates DeBoer. I don't know, Matt, Mike, have you seen... I have no words for Saturday, I don't think. I have no words for Saturday. I was... like reluctant to buy into the hype of the offensive line for sure, but I thought the defense would be really good. I thought the defense would be like deeper. It was really bad. I mean, like they're bad. Maybe it's one game. Maybe Florida State's really good. Maybe all those dream scenarios that I just threw out there happen.
Is it Ty Simpson's fault?
I don't think it's that's so weird that people are like rushing to that. In my opinion, I don't think it was his fault. I don't think he looked great. I do think all the idiots that were like banging the drum for him to be, to start over Milroe. There's a lot of apologies should probably be going out to Jalen Milroe. But they're just a bad football team. Like they look like a bad football team. They were the stuff that drives me crazy isn't losing, Mike. It as a fan, right? I'm speaking specifically as a fan of any team. It is dumb shit. So it's like get the fucking play call in, buddy. Like they couldn't do that. They couldn't get play calls in. Like Gus Malzahn put on a masterclass. Like you know what the saddest part if you're a Bama fan was? The saddest part on Saturday is they went in at halftime down 24-7 or whatever the score was. And I looked over at Allie and I go, there's no one coming to save this team. There's no one making halftime adjustments. Like if there's anything I know about DeBoer, which isn't a lot, but remember I told you this in media days, I asked him directly. I said, hey, you're 15-3 against the top 25 teams. It's the best record in the country. You have 14 losses or 13 losses to unranked teams. And you've like 10 of those, you were a double digit favorite or 10 of those you were favored in 10 of those. Like you, all of these things keep happening in games you're supposed to win. How do you figure out a way to be more consistent and win the games you're supposed to win? And he got like very defensive and he was like, well, it's like, we want to win every game. And I was like, oh no, it is. But like, dude, anyone that sits here, this is not a gone are the days of kick sixes. Gone are the days of like 2015 Ole Miss where Bama has like five turnovers and three of them inside their own 25 and fluke catches. Mike Norvell walked up and dropped his nuts on the table on 4th-and-1 from his own 34 and was like, stop it. And they fucking ran through the face of your best player, defensive player Deontay Austin. It was bad, man.
So where are we at now expectation-wise? Again, week one, try not to overreact, but this is literally all we've got to go off of. But, where do you see the ceiling and the floor for this Alabama now that we're 0-1?
I mean, if we're being objective, like, and again, I think that goes both ways. Like you said, like it's like all we have is one game to go off of. So, like, if this is what we have to go off of, I also, Mike, it's hard not to look at the fact that they're 5-5 in their last 10 games and 1-3 in their last four. Like, right. You could talk me more into them beating LSU or Georgia than you can them beating Oklahoma, Vandy, Auburn, like any of these games you were supposed to win. Like, I have no faith that this team and this staff is going to come in and somehow right the ship, because it's going to take adjustments and somebody's going to have to put their foot down. I mean, it's like, what does it say? I just saw a podcast.
He just said you're unprofessional and he's out of here.
Bye, James Ferris. Have a good day, man. Hey, when you come back, add more numbers to the end of your name on here or else. James Ferris, 4578 does not care for me. Oh, no.
Does he come back if he's 8-4 or worse?
If he's 8-4, I think he comes back. He's gonna need a win though against Tennessee. Like, who's he gonna beat, dude? Like.
How about this though? I've already come up with the plan.
Oh God.
We're gonna pull a Billy Napier, and we're gonna struggle, and we're gonna lose support, and then we're gonna throw in the kid. He's gonna look like $1 million. And then we can rally behind. We got a five-star quarterback that is in year two. Could you see that? That's like the best scenario, I think, for Bama.
Oh, I could see him doing that in year one. And I wouldn't even necessarily be opposed to it. I would hate it for Ty Simpson, kind of, because he's did there or stayed there and did the right things. I love you too, Spartan 035. Add more letters and numbers to your name. Get Stephen Willis on here, bud.
Yeah, who the hell's okay. that?
What? Anyway.
Just throw out random guests for us, please.
Yeah. You know what? Get Phil Robertson in here. Actually, I think that's a real person. No, but like I think that you saw Gus do this in 2019 with Auburn, and he kind of hitched his entire wagon to Bo Nix as a freshman five-star quarterback, which I thought was a smart move at the time, right? Like I understood why he did it. I think if he does that with Keelan, that's his only saving grace right now. I agree with what Cotton SEC says too. Simpson played well enough for them to win. Simpson wasn't the problem. Like no turnovers, like the completions were bad. But I saw somebody say, well, look what he did under pressure. His numbers were terrible. It was 3 of 14. Well, this is like the 17th year in a row that you've told me Alabama has the best offensive line in the country.
Yeah.
And it's like the fourth year in a row. It's been awful. Like Caden Proctor, number one recruit offensive tackle in the country, former five-star, projected top 10 pick, about 6'7", 370 pounds. Again, worst offensive line performance of anyone on that unit. Like, gave up six pressures, gave up a sack, like multiple penalties. It's just stuff that is like the Bama defense is very concerning. And then it's other stuff that's like, that shows up. You're like that, the lack of hustle, the lack of like, how many times did you watch a play being called in and Bama players are looking over the side and they're not set. Like I was in like my Matt Ryan era, just screaming like, get fucking set, like repeatedly. And it's just, again, maybe Florida State's good. Maybe Florida State's good. But coming into game one and having that type of effort, not performance, effort, is embarrassing. And what I spoke to someone who's pretty close to the old regime, wink, wink, and her comment was, anyone, like, no matter how bad you think it is, I'm telling you right now it's worse.
Wow.
When was the last time Bama lost the first game of the season? 2001 against UCLA. I was there. It was awful.
Hell yeah. You know who's celebrating?
Everyone.
Legend, cousin JR.
Yeah.
Has done it again.
He just gifted a membership. JR is a big dog. He gifted Chris Walker. Chris, welcome to the family. All right, that's so for JR, Marler, he's a big dog.
Okay.
I think, could you make the argument? We'll talk Texas here in a second, but could you make the argument that I have that there was no bigger winner in the SEC than Georgia, because Georgia ain't falling off and now Bama stumbling. Texas, again, Texas will probably rebound, but they're already in a slight hole. Could you make the argument there was no bigger winner in the SEC week one than Georgia, who's, you know, again, they're probably the favorites to win it now if they weren't already.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty simple, way to argue that point, to be honest, because LSU played and exists. But I don't think you're wrong. I said this repeatedly in the offseason, and especially Texas fans didn't want to hear it, which was like, hey, this team just won the SEC championship. They beat Texas twice. Like, give me Kirby Smart with a chip on his shoulder any day of the week. Give me Kirby Smart with a chip on his shoulder and a quarterback with a receding hairline that's been in college for multiple years and then also drives a pickup truck from Bumblefuck, Georgia. Yeah, I'll take that any day of the week going into a season. So I was never low on them. Like I was never low on them being a contender. Like I had them as like my preseason number one in the conference. I'm also a pretty big firm believer on not removing teams from that spot if they don't lose, especially after they won the title a year ago. But with what LSU did, I also am very high on LSU. Now back to the Georgia thing though, all the stuff you want to see, Zachariah Branch had a big day. Gunnar Stockton had a big day with his legs and his arm. Like the defense looked good. It's an inferior opponent, all that kind of stuff. But this is a perfect win for Kirby to get the season started off. I thought Gunnar Stockton, like the confidence that Gunnar Stockton has, I don't think is ever going to be something we see until like November or in a big game moment when he gets like real fired up and stuff like that. And we see the guys rally around him. But the confidence that Kirby Smart has in him has been so palpable and so present in public. Like, I think that has only made this team like Kirby could have gone into the season with, whoa, everyone's fighting for position and we don't know who's going to do what, blah, blah. But him naming the starter and having him at media days, especially, was like, that's, I love that. I love that.
Well, I also know that you loved LSU.
Whooping Clemson's
ass to hell with Clemson. They've lost to the SEC 4 in a row. Your boy Dabo got spanked at home. Thoughts on LSU, you big LSU homer, now that they were the biggest winners in the conference. And now, you know, it's them and Georgia and Texas, I would think, are the perceived favorites right now.
Can we sing the song?
Can we sing?
Oh, suck that tiger dick, bitch. So aggressive. So there's kids singing it down here in Baton Rouge, man. It's unbelievable. I thought this was awesome, and it was awesome for so many reasons, Mike. I was so fired up to see the fact that, like, all the questions we had about this team. I remember saying when the rankings came out, the very first thought that I had was, they may not be national champs. They may not win the national championship, but them starting out at 9, I remember thinking to myself, there's no chance that there are 8 rosters better than this team. Like, there's no chance. Now, there's some questions, and I thought the biggest question was, you have an offensive line that is going to take some time to gel and going to need some time to gel together and all that kind of stuff, like a lot of offensive lines do. But, you know, I fully expected that to happen throughout the season, but not week one, not against the best defensive line and one of the best defenses in the country, we thought. And on paper, you know, four future first rounders and some of the way too early mock draft projections. Kate Klubnik, who just flew under the radar somehow for most of the year, despite putting up monster numbers. And it's like, you look at all these things, and then you look at the one number that no one seemed to really want to go over until after the game ended, which was 0-4. And Dabo's now 0-4. Never, yeah, that's fair. Very fair. 0-4 against SEC teams in his last 4 games. I leave the stats up here for a second, because how about LSU outrushing Clemson by over 70-something yards, nearly 80? How about the fact they held him to 1.7 yards per carry? Like, I mean, like, how about Kate Klubnik only 50% completion percentage? Like, I mean, that defense, I knew from, like, being in Baton Rouge and going to, you know, see all the practices and being around fall camp, that was a unit that was going to get significantly better. I did not think that they were going to fly around the ball that fast and have the defense and DBU thing come back to fruition that fast. And it was so fitting, Mike. It was so fitting to watch the very last play of that game to see Harold Perkins shot out of a fucking cannon to come along the line and then run and make Kate Klubnik run for his life and end that game. And here's the thing, too. I'm not trying to just dunk on Clemson fans. I think Clemson still makes the playoff because their schedule is very easy and all that kind of stuff. This was not a 17-10 game. The playoff committee in 8 weeks is going to look at this bullshit and be like, oh, yeah, this is great. Like, they you know, they had a close game. They had a chance to tie it up late. That game should have been 27-10. Barry and Brown had a touchdown. Brian Kelly probably should have kicked a field goal as well. That game was not nearly as close as the scoreboard said.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I was going to mention that LSU really whipped their ass up and down the field for the better, essentially the last 3 quarters of the football game. So, LSU, huge, huge winners. I was dead wrong about them. They look like a contender not only to win the SEC, but to perhaps the national championship. Well, speaking of championships,
Alabama.
Is this man's? I mean, what do you take into this? Arch Manning, overrated? Are they dead in the water? Is Sarkisian? Is he a big game coach? I'm starting to doubt it at this point in time. I know, again, try not to overreact.
Yeah,
this was ugly, ugly, ugly offensive football, but maybe it was just elite defensive football for both teams.
Yeah, I don't know who could have seen this coming. I mean, you're telling me right now that Texas, starting a first-year quarterback, not a first-year quarterback, but a first-year starter, and I know that he started against ULM and Mississippi State, but you're telling me his first big start on the road against the defending national champions when they replaced 11 or 12 NFL draft picks, 23 over the last 2 years, five first rounders, seven off the offensive from 2024 alone last year. You're telling me they struggled against the defending national champs? You're telling me they shouldn't have been favored to win that game? Like, that's crazy, Mike. I can't believe it. I cannot believe that Ohio State, the team that just won the national title 8 months ago, somehow beat Texas. The hype that Texas got this offseason was so bizarre to me. And I get part of it that's like, yeah, that you become enamored with a Manning last name, and they're always going to be relevant. They're always going to be in contention in NIL because they have such deep pockets. And it's a great school and program. Like, they're not going anywhere. But the idea that they should have been number one, I thought was crazy. And then Arch, of course Arch struggled. He's playing one of the best defenses in the country. Like this was more so about the defense. The Texas defense is still very, very good. Like, it's very, very good. I said the other day, I was like, if they can hold teams to 14 points, I don't see many games that they lose, because I think they're going to usually score more than 14 with Steve Sarkisian at the helm. They didn't this weekend, which I think a lot speaks a lot more so about Ohio State, really, even more than just Texas. There are some flaws, and there's some things they got to get better at. But the defense is still really, really good. And I maintain that even LSU and Georgia would have struggled. I don't know if it would have been as bad, but they would have had their struggles going to Ohio State as well.
Yeah, and speaking of Arch Manning, I got to ask this because I saw it asked in the comments section, Chris. Are your glasses Warby Parker?
They are.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I assume Arch got a cut.
Is he a Warby Parker guy? Does he wear glasses?
National television. He had 20 ads during that damn thing.
Bro, you know what was really frustrating about the games this weekend, and I know that you felt this, was first off, we waited for however long. I get done wiping my tears from the Corso thing, and then it's like, all right, this game's going to start in 15 more minutes. We're like, oh my God, just fucking start the game. So then, like, it took like 20 minutes, and every game was already at commercial. And that part was really frustrating to me, but also, we need to have a conversation about ABC and ESPN fucking up on these broadcast schedules with the amount of commercials. The gameplay was so much slower than anything on Fox.
You know where you don't have to watch commercials, though, Chris? If you go to the game. Shout out SeatGeek, new sponsor of the show, SeatGeek.com. Put in that promo code SEC10 to get you 10% off. You're going to game week this weekend, you don't have tickets yet. Go over to SeatGeek. Again, promo code SEC10, get 10% off. And it's not just sports. It's like when I took my girlfriend to see Katy Perry a little while ago.
Wait, what?
It was
so
great.
How many parts of that sentence I have questions about?
I used promo codes SEC10 at SeatGeek.com, and I got 10% off my Katy Perry tickets. I couldn't have been more happier, Chris. I know you love SeatGeek. SeatGeek, SEC10, get 10% off SeatGeek. Can't beat it. You know what? He agrees. All right. How about, do you agree with Auburn being a contender now? I mean, I don't know if your lady can hear in the background, but all of a sudden, Auburn, every bad thing I said about them, they made me look like an idiot because they went on the road and won by 2 touchdowns. I guess Mighty Baylor, maybe the best damn team in the Big 12, I was told.
First off, Brodo Baggins, I like him. I think he's funny.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
But fuck you, Brodo. Marlon, are you a cat guy? Fuck off, dude. I hate cats. Cats are just snakes with legs. They're always up to no good. I don't know how anybody can ever stand them. That's good, Oscar 77. I am not around the fiance right now because she is going to the store to get some stuff. My parents are coming in town, and she's very unhappy with me about the lack of help I've had to clean the house. So, that's the only reason I'm even doing the show right now, Mike. Here's the deal. I think this was one of the most impressive wins of the week. I was super high on Auburn going into this. I put out a stat like on Thursday or something like that, which was like, you look at just the team composite, team talent composite rankings, stuff like that between these two schools. And I know you still have to play the games, and Alabama's the number one team talent composite team, whatever, in the country, and we saw how that worked out. But like, a lot of times this is Jimmy's and Joe's more so than X's and O's. Like, more often than not, that is the case. And you look at the talent disparity between them and Baylor, and it was overwhelming. And so the idea that Baylor was going to keep this close, I thought was like pretty shocking. Auburn goes in. The secondary needs some work. I was surprised there. Jay Crawford, I thought, is still a really good player. Kendrick Falk came up really big in some moments there. The defense still needs work. I was surprised at what Baylor was able to do at times, especially in the passing game and how many holes there were in the back end. I say all that. I break it down to build you up. I mean, this is – Jackson Arnold was great. I thought he was awesome. I thought that, like, there's a lot of people saying, like, oh, well, all they had to do was just run the football. Like, they couldn't throw the ball. Why would they have? Like, why would they have thrown the ball? Like, the fact that what I thought I knew more than anything about Auburn going into this season was that they had one of the best receiving corps in the entire country, top three with Ohio State and LSU. And I still firmly believe that. To be able to go on the road against a Power 4 team, against a Power 4 team that was favored to beat you, and that line kept shifting back and forth. I'm sure you saw it over at MyBookie, and make sure you're using promo code SEC over at MyBookie as well. Yeah. But I'm sure you saw it going back and forth. The fact that they were able to go on the road, beat them by 14 while still having the deficiencies in the back end and not even having to depend on Cam Coleman and Simmons and all those guys, like, that says way more to me in a positive way about Auburn than anything else.
Yeah, why throw the football when you don't have to? I did see your very impressive tweet on the talent, but I just bet against Hugh Freeze, and it usually works out, but it sure as hell didn't this week. Maybe he's going to, you know, he got his 18 in on Saturday. He earned it this week. You know what?
Let him play some golf. Dude, I would have walked into that fucking press conference with two bags of golf on, or two golf bags on my shoulders. And just not even addressed it. Like, I mean, the amount of crap that guy took in the offseason.
What was this the biggest win of the Hugh Freeze era?
What else would it have been?
I mean, that maybe last year beating A&M, maybe?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think this is, because I think it's one of those things where you just have to get some momentum going. And I think that program needed it. You saw the fans on social media, man. I think that it was really... Thank you, Emily Powell. I appreciate that. I think that they looked much better than I think that, like, it felt like going into the game, Auburn fans had this feeling like, oh, well, you know, we've heard it before and who knows and blah, blah, blah. Like, I mean, like, it was like almost like this fear and concerns. Like, we think we know we're going to be good. Like, they should be good. Look at the back-to-back top 10 classes, top five transfer class. Like, everything's in place, but like, we've heard this before. And then they come in, and then that's like that was the game that they were able to put them away. They did not allow them back in. And again, with all the deficiencies, still winning by 14 on the road against a P4 team, that's not something Auburn's done.
Well, you know who else went on the road, Marler? Tennessee. Okay. Shout out Wesley Williams. Vols gonna give Georgia fits. I agree with that. Now that we've seen these Vols in action, Chris, I mean, I know you were down on the Vols. You're always down on them. You hate Heupel. You hate Aguilar. You love Nico. But I just say that to see your face when I say it. But I mean, hell, Tennessee, they looked like a machine for the most part. Totally steamrolled Syracuse. And I thought Aguilar, not as accurate as I would have liked to see him, but he brought the deep ball back. He was highly, highly effective. And I think Tennessee won this damn quarterback trade. What about you?
I don't think it's in question. Like, and again, it's more on just a Wheel of Fortune nightmare with all those vowels, right? Yeah, Malieva goes out to the Rose Bowl, and it's just like he is surrounded by immense less talent. He's getting the taxes out there are insane. Oh, brother, there's fires and bears too. I didn't even get into that part. So here's the thing. I think Nico's Marler's ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, I was hoping you didn't see that.
Appreciate that. Anyway, so I can't get past that. I thought that Aguilar looked good. There's some things that he could definitely improve on. He was inaccurate at times. But I'll also tell you this, especially in the first half, like, he wasn't helped a lot. Mike Matthews had a couple drops. There was other receivers. Brazel had at least two, I think, in the first quarter alone.
Right.
14 had a drop as well. Like those numbers could have been even better. And I thought Tennessee looked really good. The thing for me, and listen, Syracuse is not a good defensive team. They weren't last year. They clearly aren't this year. It was impressive they were able to put up 26 points. I was really fucking hoping they were going to put up at least one more touchdown at the end of the game because they would have covered the spread. But thanks a lot to Tennessee for that. I think the being like the ability for them to run the football and being able to figure out a way to get 6.4 yards a carry with a just a revamped running game. And then the other part too is like, again, this is the thing that's most important in Josh Heupel's offense. Can you be accurate more often than not on the deep ball? And can you run the football? Both of those things, I'm not saying are at 2022 Tennessee levels by any means. What I am saying is both of those things are better than they were a year ago. Like together. Like obviously Dylan Sampson was great, but those two things looked better in that first game at Syracuse than they did at any point with Nico last year.
And we won't learn much about Tennessee this week, obviously playing East Tennessee State, but Georgia comes to town in 2 weeks. Anything you saw on Saturday, not that of course you'd sit here and say, Tennessee is going to win for sure, but anything you saw on Saturday that gives you some optimism that maybe Tennessee could give Georgia a better game than you thought in the preseason?
No.
Damn it.
No offense. I mean, like, here's the thing. This is one of the most fascinating numbers I look at all the time is...
You know how to read?
Yeah, I mean, they're just numbers. I have someone tell it to me. I have a Duolingo. It's for English. So, the thing is, I love this matchup every year, and I keep waiting for Josh Heupel to break through because he's given off or defenses fits around the country, right? But this idea that they can somehow get, for whatever reason, Kirby Smart just has his number. Like they've held him under 17 points every single year. They've played him Tennessee has scored first. They've scored first in 5 straight years against Georgia. And then we've seen how they had a 10-0 lead last year. I thought that might've been the year. So it should be one of those things. I think they're going to be amped up. I love watching Josh Heupel on script more than any other coach in the country. It's a lot of fun to watch. And that chess match in the beginning of the game is great. I don't know this is one of those things where I have to see them beat Georgia,
right?
Or at least compete with them for 3 quarters before I think that they're going to beat them, because even that 2022 game was not very close.
Well, I appreciate your honesty, even if you're wrong. All right. Okay. Shout out Hook'em Horns. Cody just gifted a membership to Nate Randolph. Welcome to the family. All right, Chris, I know you're dying to talk about your cock.
Yeah,
Johnny Delgado, man. $10. I was told all offseason how South Carolina offensive line was supposed to be approved. They were god awful yet again. Josiah Thompson, our bookend left tackle, is a turnstile. Bamer needs to get it fixed ASAP. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't disagree with that at all. I think one of the things I kept saying was, yeah, it can't get any worse. surely it won't get any worse. It wasn't worse necessarily. It wasn't good. That was frustrating to watch. I mean, like Thompson, he got a little baptism by fire last year. They replaced 93.5% of their snaps on the interior offensive line, including all 3 of those starters from a year ago. So I get it. I get the frustration. They went to the portal. They've recruited well there. At some point you just want one guy. Like can one guy be something you can count on? And that does not seem to be the case. The pass protection is what they keep talking about, and they gave up the 4 sacks, whatever. That is concerning. The bigger thing for me is not being able to effectively run the ball consistently unless Lenore Sellers is involved. Like, they tried it a lot in the first quarter. You saw it with Faison, you saw it with Attaway. They kept trying to run in between the tackles, and you had, I think, 8 carries for 9 yards from the running backs late in the first half. Now, let's get out of all the negativity with that, and let's also talk about the fact that you played a Power 4 team on the road. The biggest question wasn't the offensive line, not from, like, maybe for Carolina fans, but the biggest question that everyone else around the country kept having, and it wasn't even a question, it was something they felt like they already had answered, which was, oh, man, how are they going to replace all those guys they lost in the NFL draft? And I said this over and over. Chris Doering said this to me about Florida in 2019 or 2020. And I was like, yeah, I mean, they're not going to be able to replace all those guys. And he's like, well, you didn't know who those guys were going into last season. So why would all of a sudden you just be like, oh, yeah, all these other guys? Like that's how I felt about South Carolina was. You didn't know who all those players were. Nobody thought Kyle Kennard was going to lead the country or lead the SEC in sacks and be the defensive player of the year. Nobody thought that. And Demetrius Knight was going to be a top 50 pick after his own coach said, yeah, he's working for DoorDash or Uber Eats. He's not good enough to play at South Carolina. Like, Fred Johnson's a star. Kalen DeBoer letting Justin Orin Ronquo go is hilarious because that kid looked like he's shot out of a fucking cannon all night long. Like the speed they had, the physicality from the linebacker position, they were better up front than anyone thought they would be. The secondary is still really good. You held a kid to 42.9% completion percentage. And what do you know? It's an ugly, ugly game. And then the fourth quarter comes around and you put your foot on someone's throat and you don't fucking let up. They score 14 points in the fourth quarter. The deep ball to Harbor was beautiful. Vicari Swain's punt return was awesome. There was a lot of growth, I thought, from the coaching staff. There's some issues still for sure, but you walked out as with a double-digit win against a Power 4 opponent when you were playing probably your C-plus game. And I think the thing that I enjoyed most out of this, Mike, was Sellers, the entire offseason we heard about how he can't throw the football. He had two drops in the first quarter to Harbor and Donovan Murph that probably would have gone for about probably combined, I would think, 20, 25 yards. The touchdown I thought was bullshit that got taken off. Like those numbers, 12-19 for 209 yards, two total touchdowns, probably should have been something closer to 15-19 for 250 yards and three touchdowns. And now we're talking about Sellers in an even different way to start the year. But I thought they looked good, man.
Yeah, and I don't think I saw anything. Now, again, I don't watch outside the SEC, but I didn't see anything that just showed that Lenore Sellers is not the most dominant player in college football. I mean, yeah, he's a special, special talent. I think everybody should have already known that if they didn't. And I thought he put that on display.
Did you see that? There's a couple things he did. He should have never taken the safety. There was one where he fumbled once when he got hit and South Carolina was able to recover it. Like that was an issue that plagued him a lot last year, early on, especially. He had 9 fumbles in his first 5 or 6 games, and I think they lost like 6 of them or something crazy. But the other thing was, like, did you see him throw a single pass yesterday? A single pass that should have been intercepted?
No.
Yeah, me neither. Good answer, bitch.
Yeah. Any other, were there any other big takeaways you had? I know there was a lot of cupcakes. These Oklahoma fans cannot, I mean, they'd go balls deep on John Mateer right now, and he'd look like $1 million. He leads the SEC in passing, but I'm a little bit, my biggest takeaway is that they can't run the damn ball in Illinois State. I think that's a bigger issue with them, Michigan, because all Michigan is line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
That's going to be a hell of a showdown, and I'm a little less less confident. I'm not saying Oklahoma's not going to beat Michigan, but I'm a little less confident after that debut. What, any thoughts there?
I mean, this is a stat sheet game for me. You're done with this. Mateer and Green are better than Sellers. Did anybody argue that they weren't? Were we just talking about a good player?
In the comments, they're saying Mateer's better than Sellers.
Oh, so it's Mateer. I thought he was great, man. I thought, like, a firm believer. Like, him going out there and having 4 total touchdowns, nearly 400 yards. Listen, the best debut that anyone's had. God, if you don't start putting the fucking outline as the same color as the logo, I'm gonna kill you. The same, like they had the same or the best debut since Baker Mayfield or something like that. Like I thought that was great. It's really bad competition for sure, but this is our first time we've been able to see him play in a Sooners uniform against a defense that wasn't wearing the same uniform. So I thought he was better than advertised. I thought they were good. I fully bought into the Mateer hype. Well, it'll be interesting to see what they look like with a better defense. And a Michigan team. I'm glad they get that game at home. But yeah, I mean, I the thing that everyone kept saying to me about anytime I doubted Oklahoma, especially that one guy who, a keg of Red Bull. The thing that everyone kept saying to me was their defense is what people kept counting out and looking over and dismissing from a year ago. Like everyone knew the fact that like the Mateer was going to be good and like you know, the offensive line was bad, the injuries were bad. Like Venables caught so much heat, but the defense was still good. And so if the defense can be, you know, a top half, let alone maybe a top 5 defense in this league, they're going to be a lot better than I originally thought.
Any concern with A&M? It was a close game. They pulled away in the second half, but it was a 5-point game early in the third. Marcell Reed, I thought, looked good. But this is another one. They got everybody back on the offensive line. They got all their running backs back. Yet they struggled to run the football. You don't want Marcell Reed. I know he's a runner, but you don't want him being your leading rusher after the first game. Any concern there for A&M?
I thought 24 points was a lot. I thought that, I know at least late in the first half, it might have been the third quarter. I think it was just the second quarter, but I could be wrong. That game being 21-17, I didn't love that.
Early in the third.
It was, right? So I think the other part too is like, I don't think UTSA, it's a big state. It's the deepest state in the country for talent. I'm sure they have some guys, like Billy Lucci was raving about the head coach there and all that kind of stuff. And maybe a little bit of that was just him trying to take away some of the pressure that heat that A&M was getting after this close. The game was closer than it should have been. Like, I just feel like 24 points felt like too many points to this team when Mike Elko is your head coach. So it's still a win, and it might be something that no one gives a shit about later in the year. And we'll find out about A&M pretty quickly because they had some good teams coming. They got to go to Notre Dame in 2 weeks. So, but that other part is Notre Dame doesn't look, I mean, they're beatable. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how this team gets better each week. I agree with you, man. The running back situation, like them not having a actual running back lead them in rushing, and it'd be Marcell Reed, because it didn't feel like it was like on a bunch of designed runs. I just thought that was I came away a little bit more concerned with A&M than I thought I would be. How about that?
Mm-hmm. And we got the first conference game of the season coming up quickly here.
Who?
With Ole Miss at Kentucky. Buddy, any thoughts on that? Austin Simmons looked, you know, he had a couple struggles. One pick wasn't his fault, but he looked very, very sharp. They beat the hell out of Georgia State. Kentucky struggled. I think it was an ugly, ugly win. Toledo did score late to make it look a little bit closer, but any early thoughts on Ole Miss at Kentucky?
I mean, good for Kentucky for not losing, because I'm not even trying to say to be a dick. I'm saying it because, like Toledo was a team that had more top 25 votes than Auburn and Baylor did. They had 13. I think Auburn had 10, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. that was a favorite for a lot of people on an upset pick. I had them at plus 10.5. Thank God. They covered that late. But I think the other thing is the thing with Calzada, I didn't see a ton from Kentucky. I feel pretty good, even though I know nothing about Toledo, that they probably don't have a great defense. Don't see a lot of MAC teams in the top 25 of the country for defense. So I was a little bit disappointed of the offensive output there. Ole Miss in a revenge game at Kentucky is hilarious. But I think it's also, all jokes aside, you better have your shit together, because like, this is a game that kept you out of the playoff. It's not just an embarrassing loss. This kept you out of the playoff. So I want to know what this looks like with, because Ole Miss is the superior team by a ton. I don't think that he's going to take the foot off the gas at all. I think he's going to try to go prove a point. But they were also the better team a year ago. Are we going to talk about Mississippi State?
Yeah, let's do it. Mississippi State, big win over Southern Miss. Buddy, on the road, too. They came right out, scored 75-yard touchdowns in like four or five plays. I was like, oh, they're going to whoop his team's ass.
Yeah.
But then it was kind of close there for a minute. They pulled away in the second half. They got several good running backs. Line of scrimmage, I thought, still a little bit of an issue. But, hell, all you got to do is win next week. And I know you're an underdog. But if you do, I think you completely turn the narrative around.
Yeah. I know that people don't give a shit about the SEC, like pulling for just SEC teams. I know Hell Steak is hilarious, by the way. I don't know why. It's so funny. But the idea of pulling for the conference is pretty stupid. I know Ole Miss fans, I'm going to miss you with this. So I get it. You don't have to. But like, there is no better win for the conference this year in the regular season than if Mississippi State beats Arizona State. Maybe Arkansas beating Notre Dame, because that would be less likely in terms of like what Vegas will probably have in the line on versus A&M playing Notre Dame. But dude, if Mississippi State can put it together, people forget Blake Shapen's good, man. Like Blake Shapen's a good quarterback. He just got injured, but his numbers before last year was really a lot better than people think. I going on the road, people hate each other in Mississippi. I don't know if it's the heat. They just do not like each other there. And if like, I mean, Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans, that's one thing. But like, I mean, Southern Miss fans were fired up for this game. And I heard multiple people that were Mississippi State guys saying like, oh, this is their Super Bowl, which is okay. That's cool. But I think that winning the game, pulling away late, like it was close at halftime, 13-10. I was impressed with Mississippi State. I was happy for Jeff Lebby. God, I hope they get a win this week, man.
You know who really needs a win, though?
Me.
Heisbo. Come on! Oh! With Kansas coming to town. Any thoughts on this? Well, Kansas looks like $1 million. Mizzou looked like $1 million in the opener. This is a game that, there's not a Missouri fan out there that's going to forgive you if you lose to freaking Kansas at home. There's a lot on the line for drinking company.
M-I-Z!
C-O-U!
F-K-U! I fucking hate Kansas. I'm going to be so pumped for this game. One of my best friends is from St. Charles, Missouri. Big, big. I am a Swift. You've seen her twice. And Katy Perry once. So, great shows, by the way. The Mizzou-Kansas thing is the most underrated rivalry, I think, in the sport. I know they haven't played football in like 12 years or whatever, but I mean from a pure hatred standpoint, not that there's something always in the line or something, but like this is Ole Miss Mississippi State from a hatred standpoint. They hate each other, like hate each other. And I love that this game's coming back. I love that Bo Fibula looks fantastic. he was great. Bo Pterodactyl was one of my favorite players in week one. He was really, really good. I think that Kansas, it scares me a little bit more than I was hoping to admit. And the thing that worries me about Mizzou, both offensive transfers they brought in looked great. Ahmad Hardy had 10 carries for 100 yards and a touchdown. Kevin Coleman led the team in receptions with 6. Bo Pribula was great, put up almost 350 yards total offense. Kansas is going to be better than I was hoping. But Mizzou's defense only getting 2 sacks against Central Arkansas kind of concerns me. Maybe it shouldn't. Maybe I'm overreacting there. But I think this is a really, really big game, and I was excited to see the answer that we got at quarterback. I hated the way it happened because you don't want to see Sam Horn go down with an injury, especially with like his future and also what he's had to deal with since he's been there. But man, like what Pribula did in game one was great.
Yeah, and the kicker's out too for Missouri.
Oh, well, never mind. I change it right now.
I'm just saying, if it comes down to a kick, that could be – things could get interesting. You know what?
Yeah.
How about another big game that I wanted to ask you about, though, upcoming, and that would be Vanderbilt.
Oh, God.
Virginia Tech. How about it, buddy? I mean, Vanderbilt looked like $1 million. Again, yeah. I know the competition sucked, but no, we have seen Virginia Tech against South Carolina. They look beatable. I think – now it is in Blacksburg, there's a little bit of a revenge factor here. But I think this is, you were talking about big wins for the SEC. I think if Vanderbilt wins on the road against Virginia Tech, I think that'd be pretty massive for the conference.
Good Lord, J.M. Jones. Yikes! You think my parents are still married? You fucking idiot. Anyway, Vanderbilt and Va Tech. You're right. This could be a big one. I was impressed with Va Tech a little bit up front, in the trenches especially. I love what I saw from Vanderbilt because it's all the things you would want to see. Okay, like can we finally start admitting that Diego Pavia is a really good thrower of the football? Like
I can.
It's crazy to me. Everyone got out, like shit on me with the quarterback rankings all the time because I was like, hey, 28 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. That's good. Like those are good numbers. And the fact that he started off, 20-25 again, I said this last year, if you can find his odds, maybe you find it at my bookie and use the promo code SEC, his player prop of any time you see him over 1.5 touchdowns, hammer it. Like he is good for that every single game. He's good for that every single game. 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions seems like every single game. So I hope they can win, man. And it's more so than anything. I don't care about how it looks for the conference. I just want to keep seeing this Vandy story going.
I think they will. I think they will, buddy. So any other thoughts? Any teams we didn't hit on that you wanted to discuss?
Did we miss anybody?
Well, Florida played Long Island.
Overrated, huh?
Taylen Green scored six tutties against Bama, and it was just a rough week for Bama.
Yeah, it was. Whole state. You know, it'll pick up, though. I'm sure that state's going to finally turn the corner progressively. Anyway, I thought the Florida thing that was cool, I mean, and this sounds stupid, and I'm admittedly saying this from a purely a box score merchant type deal here, okay? Uh-huh. This is going to shock a lot of you. I didn't fucking watch a second of Florida Long Island besides the highlights, okay? They played a drink, for God's sake. So Florida... One, the catch that Vernell, what's his name, made was incredible.
Brown.
That might be the catch of the year. I love that. His name is it Vernell Brown the third?
It is.
I don't know a lot of Vernells, but I feel like everyone that I've ever seen or met, they have a third or fourth attached to their name. You don't see a lot of Vernell ones. You know what I mean? Like, you don't see a lot of OG Vernells.
That's true.
Yeah. So anyway, the fact that they did not ask what's his name? DJ Lagway to do some of the stuff he did last year, which was a lot of times last year, man, you saw it against Samford. It's like, oh, what were his numbers? He was 7 of 14 for 1,000 yards. Like, why are they throwing the ball so far downfield all the time? Like, I love the fact that he was 15 of 18 for 120 yards. They got him going in the intermediate game stuff. They had a couple of big plays still, but like getting him in shorter situations, I'm interested in seeing that because that's just something they Brooks Austin said this a whole bunch and he's so spot on about it. They really asked him to do a lot last year. I mean, just a lot. So I thought it was good to see that in game one. And then the last one, man, Taylen Green. Watch Taylen Green, man. He's what's fun about college football. I hate to use this example, but who's that tall, lanky white kid they had in like the early 2000s? Matt Jones.
Uh-huh.
Like or that Mallett. Kid, they were never well. No, yeah, but like Mallett was like more so of a thrower than a runner. But like,
right?
That he is a human highlight reel, and like, I don't think Arkansas is going to go win 10 games. They're probably not going to win 8. But him playing quarterback is a ton of fun to watch. I thought it was great the start he got off of year 2 under Bobby Petrino. They got Notre Dame in a couple of weeks. It's fucking bullshit that they're going to play that game at 11 a.m. But yeah, I'm excited about those two teams. I thought it was great to see those players and have some star power.
And I know we briefly hit on it, but any early read on Michigan, Oklahoma?
Sorry, I'm just reading some of the stuff that J.M. Jones is writing. He is he okay? You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks, Wolfgang. We're going to split that $10. Don't worry.
Yeah.
No, the Michigan, Oklahoma game, first off, the slate sucks. And I hate to say that because it's like, you don't want that to happen. You know my life, Mike, and the teams that I have to pay attention to, and now the one that I'm engaged to. Mm-hmm. And this isn't my own channel. I'm not allowed to cuss under the Locked On thing. This is who I am. I hate to say this. So the 6 o'clock, starting at 6 o'clock, you get LSU, Auburn, Bama, and South Carolina. All four of those games start within 45 minutes of each other, and I hate it. I hate it. enjoyed SDS more or me more?
No, he says he enjoyed that site more when you were there.
Yeah. Just a lot of good, positive things that have happened since then. And you know what? We'll say it because they're not watching anyway. SC Chairman, why am I no longer with SDS? Because sometimes people like making money and working for people that know what they're doing. Mike can probably agree with that. There's still some good people there, though. They're just not in charge. So
I did a radio interview recently.
Uh-huh.
And the guy's like, you're still with Saturday Down South, right? And I was like, buddy, thanks for following along. It's been about 5 years. You know what?
Do your followers know the story of when you quit?
I don't think so.
Oh, brother. This is a fun little peel behind the onion here, guys. Just like me and Mike worked there together since 2017. But you were full-time in 2017. I wasn't. And then 2018, I was full-time, but 2021, when my life kind of fell apart, I was engaged to someone, and the engagement got broken off in my mind out of nowhere. And then Mike had also become like my only friend at SDS. Like we would talk way more. It was like, we got closer and friends during some of the stuff that was going on there and as our time went on. And this asshole calls me the day after my engagement ends, and he goes, guess what? And I was like, what, man? What? And he's like, you okay? I was like, no, Ali broke off the engagement. And he's like, I quit SDS. And I was like, everything fucking sucks. So yeah, it's funny. I always give him a hard time for that, but
he took that worse than the engagement.
Way worse. But everything obviously works out for a reason. It's you've killed it. And it's awesome to be able to come on the show again this year. And then, yeah. And then also, obviously my life is now better. So that's good.
Yeah, hey, fun times. Anything else? How do people follow you? How do they find the 20 million shows that you're on?
So if you want to see a PG version of me, I'm on Locked On Gamecocks. And
I'll be on there this week, right? You haven't told me when.
Thanks, Emily. I appreciate that. I do Locked On Gamecocks. We have our own podcast that we're finally starting to do again. Ironically enough, Mike, the co-host is Tyler Huck, FSU grad, longtime good friend of mine.
Oh, that's must watch this week.
Our new producer is his like best friend from college, Eddie Buza. He's an FSU grad. Is the voice of Seminole softball, and so I was hearing from them a lot this week. And we'll have a great show with them this week that'll probably come out tonight or tomorrow. And then like somebody else said earlier in the comments, I cover stuff for ESPN 104.5 here in Baton Rouge and LouisianaSports.net covering the SEC. And so you can read all about it there. Got an article coming out why the dynasty is dead officially in about 8 minutes. So make sure you check it out.
All they do is win over there. Someone tell me Sellers is winning the Heisman.
The Heisman. Book it.
He's just a freak show talent. You know what? No one deserves it more.
I'm a joke of the Locked On channels. What are you talking about? I do a great job at Locked On.
Is that what they said?
I'm like the only one that talks about actual football besides Gordy. The rest of them are like, no, here's the thing. They all have small hands. Here's the thing. Why do my fingers look so fat? All right, let's
perfect way to end it.
Yeah,
some kind words from Emily. Thank you, Emily. Thank you all for watching. We'll be back later this evening with Steven. See ya. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.